Hi, everyone. 4 years ago, Pastor Dave and I did a podcast on elections, what it means to be a part of the world's government, what it means to be a part of the Christian church's government, and how to balance the two. We decided, since election time is coming up very soon, to edit this podcast up a bit. Some of you may have heard it 4 years ago, and some of you might not. It is about 29 minutes, and we hope that you will enjoy it and that it will be a blessing to you.
Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Reading the Bible can be difficult.
Not to mention understanding it.
Having a disability such as blindness or another can be difficult too.
Sometimes it feels like God's not even there.
But in room 4216,
God shows us his path and we find we are not alone. Hi, everyone. It's Pastor Dave.
And Cecilia.
How are you doing today?
I am doing very well. And good, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm okay. I'm okay.
Good.
Yeah. We are talking about those in authority.
Oh, because then my next guess was going to be that we're talking about traps. I guess not.
No. Authority. Especially as we are here in an election cycle in the United States, a lot of people are asking me questions. And this show will not be about the candidates. We won't even mention the candidates, whether it be the top or state or local. But how does a Christian deal with this? Are we in a Christian country? Maybe we should look at the history of governments, because that can unfold an awful lot.
Oh, that could take several podcasts.
How do I vote as a Christian? And is there ever a time that it's okay to not obey the government? These are questions people are asking me right now, and so I kind of thought, hey, maybe we should have a show. Prior to looking at a Christian's role in respect to the government today, I thought it would be good to kind of look at the history of governments as it dates all the way back.
Democracy, theocracy, autocracy, democratic republic, idiocracy, anarchy, monarchy, dictatorship. Oh, I mentioned that one already. There are so many kinds of governments.
There really are. And we'll touch
on... Oh, I forgot utopia. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. That becomes a very important key, actually, to some of it. I want to take first, before we look at all of those in specific, if you look at the world's history in general, up until the 15th century... maybe you'd say the 16th century, which is the Renaissance, everything was seen as a theocracy, meaning the world evolved around God. God was always at the top. Then it moved from with the Renaissance, where humans were now the center of things. And with that, really, that's when the monarchies and the autocracies started to fall, and the democracies and the republicans really started to take hold in more of the world than just here or there.
We're talking, for instance, King Henry VIII, when he separated England from the Catholic Church, right?
Well, I was actually thinking of the French Revolution, where they got rid of the kingdoms.
Too.
And even in England, though you had Henry VIII, they also shifted then to Parliament, where there was a, we'd call it a republic more than a democracy, that people represent the people, and the representatives then, that's why it's a republic, do much of the voting. Of day-to-day activity. And this took place throughout Europe and, of course, here in the United States as well. What we're finding now, however, one last thing, is we're almost moving from the humanist center to the individual as center. That movement's still afoot and not done yet, but that's what you're starting to hear with some things, and that really can break into anarchy, because the person has to be at the top and center.
All right, I understand the monarchy. That's the king rules and the people obey.
Mm-hmm.
And autocracy, that's the dictatorship. That's the tyrant rules, the subjects, the people cower.
Yep.
Yeah. And the democracy. Tell me about that, and tell me about a republic.
The democracy,
they're related.
Yeah, they are. The democracy started with the city-states back in the ancient Greece, as I understand it. And the city, the people would elect and do literally democracy. Everyone would vote, and that's what a democracy means. It's a rule by the people.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'd elect them. They didn't call them mayor. I don't remember what they called them back then. Magistrate, I think, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
A republic came about a little later. That was more in the Roman Empire, is my understanding, when there was more than just a one or two city-states, and it got to be so many people that not everybody could vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so the people would vote to have a representative act on behalf of them. So the people would vote, 1,000 people would vote, let's say, and have one representative. The one representative would then go and be part of the government.
And they would vote then on behalf of their people.
Exactly.
Correct? And that's what we would call a democratic republic, which is
correct.
What we have now, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Then there's one more. This mm-hmm. isn't, I don't know if this is exactly government, but it's kind of society. Let's talk about the utopia.
Yes. And it is actually an attempt for a government. Utopias are usually seen as, if you know your United States history and American culture history, many groups have come over. There's some among the Lutherans who did it, the Amish do it. They try to have a little city, and they believe God is leading them, and that usually the spokesperson then is the pastor or the clergy. And so it really almost becomes a theocracy. Now, some will do a variation twist off of that where they're not says quite as emphasizing the theo part of it, the God thing. But again, it's usually a small group of people wanting to live in harmony, and they just interact with themselves and try to live with peace and harmony. And usually God's somewhere in the midst of all of that. Now, with that said, though, we can see throughout history that there's been some that have taken it to a grander scale, actually, that it's not just a small utopia of a small community, but that people have tried it in a larger scale, so that literally it would be a God-run church state.
Mm.
England had some of them, France and Swiss and Sweden, the Swiss. Calvin actually tried to do that in Geneva, and where it was all to be run by God and governed by God, because God ultimately is in control, so let's put him in control. And so that is the theocracy utopia. Now, there is one other type of utopia, and that's communism. That has no belief that there is no God. We just have to work in harmony and be happy together.
And share
everybody,
everything that we have.
Share everything you have, be in common, yes. Now, the utopias, there's one simple problem that they forget. People are sinners.
Yes.
And sin when it's under control, it's good for a while. But then usually there'll be some greed, some lust, some envy, and it'll rear its ugly head, and usually utopias fall apart because of that. And so it utopias usually try and need people to be perfect. Otherwise, it won't work.
Next question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a Christian form of government? Now, I'm guessing, before you answer that, mm-hmm. that a lot of people would say, well, sure, the theocracy is a Christian form of government.
Okay.
However, in my reading and such that I've done, I have to point out that the church has not always been the most godly of institutions, let alone forms of government.
Right. And we have it in the book of Acts, noted. They tried to live together and have everything in common. Like the utopia. And somebody lied and hid some of land back.
That would be Ananias and Sapphira.
Right.
Acts chapter 5.
And what was bad about that is that they lied. And so in the best settings, a utopia doesn't work, because it would have worked the best then, because they were just new at this. Jesus was alive, and they were all just had been touched by him and blessed by him. But again, that sin creeps in.
All right, then. Which form of government is the most Christian form of government?
All of them and none of them.
Hate it when you do that.
If the king is a Christian and he exercises it with fairness and mercy, it's a great Christian government. Mm-hmm. If the tyrant is actually a Christian, but just a firm one, it could be a reasonable. If the democracy is votes people in who are good, solid Christians, it could be. But then you come to the reverse.
If the democracy votes in greedy, corrupt, no good, rotten people, then the democracy
is... That's what you get with it. Yep, yep. And that's actually one of the early founders did comment about that, that if people do vote in such people, it will not last. That we need to have moral people and a moral fiber. Otherwise, the democracy will not last because there's opportunity for greed. And that's the thing about capitalism. It's not really the government, but the style of economy. That when capitalism, in a sense, builds off of greed, but greed that is balanced with care for other people. So, again, it's... When it comes to government, neither and both, depending who's in charge.
So it may or may not be a Christian form of government, but what's a Christian to do?
Ah, a Christian is to live under the government in which they find themselves. They are to work to do good, both for the government and for their society.
Wait, but what if I don't like the people who are governing me?
That's not your role. That's not what's the matter. You may not like them, but the key is our function, our role is to uplift them, even when it's not comfortable. Peter wrote, Peter was under the Roman rule, where Caesar was the emperor. Not a Christian. In fact, Peter was killed for his faith. So he was under a government that was totally anti-Christian. And he said in his first letter, chapter 2, verse 17, show proper respect to everyone, love the brotherhood of believers, fear God, and honor the king.
Now, you're saying you're implying here that the king mm-hmm. would have been the government in this case.
That is correct. Because but, the oh, go ahead.
But
I think I know what you're going to say. Just say it.
The king, to me, I would have thought that would have meant Jesus Christ, the king.
The verse before, the phrase before that, fear God. That's in reference to God, including Jesus. Honor the king means the earthly situation.
Matthew chapter 22, beginning at verse 15. Then the Pharisees went out and laid plans to trap him, that is Jesus, in his words. They sent their disciples to him along with the Herodians, that is the followers of Herod. Teacher, they said, we know you are a man of integrity, and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. You aren't swayed by men because you pay no attention to who they are. So, tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?
But Jesus, knowing their evil intent, said, you hypocrites, why are you trying to trap me? Show me a coin used for paying the tax. They brought him a denarius.
That's a day's wage.
And he asked them, whose portrait is this? And whose inscription? Caesar's, they replied. Then he said to them, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's. Taxes are the backbone of the government's ability to do its work. And Jesus says we are to honor that.
Playing the piano, don't you, Cecilia?
I do, yeah.
What song are you playing right now?
It is Well With My Soul.
Those last couple lines, do me a favor.
Mm-hmm.
Just play your right hand. Sounds different. Now pull your left hand. And now go ahead and play them both together again. The piano, you really need both hands. You can't play one or the other.
Well, I've heard of one or two people who have been able to play with one hand, but that takes a lot of doing.
So playing the piano, it takes all those fingers, and it does different things with the lower and the right, the lower hand, the upper hand. There we go.
Yeah.
The left hand, the right hand.
Yes, it does.
There was a theologian who said, you know, it's almost like there are two kingdoms, the kingdom of the left and the kingdom of the right. The kingdom of the left hand is the government. And what it does to do one particular thing, and that is to keep and maintain peace and prosperity in the land. The kingdom of the right hand is God's activity in the church. And he does what he does in the church, forgiveness, life, and salvation, so that there might be peace and prosperity with our souls. When the two play together, go ahead and play together again. It really is well with my soul. Sometimes, though, we want to think one is the same as the other when they really aren't. The things of the left hand are far different than the things of the right hand. But when together are played, it's a beautiful song.
I kind of like that, playing the piano and the whole idea of the two hands, the left hand being the kingdom of this world, the governments and such, and the kingdom of the right hand being God's kingdom, the kingdom of the church, the eternal kingdom. And sometimes those hands play together beautifully, and they're in one accord, as we might say. And then there are other times, of course, when they play totally separate songs and they don't sound at all the same and they're very dissonant.
Yes. And the other possibility is that when one hand tries to dominate and drown out the other and take it over so that it is all one hand or the other. And that's what a theocracy on earth tries to do, making both the government rule and the Christian rule all the same. And then you only have one hand. And then you don't have as beautiful music, and many times you don't have anything but pounding bass. And if it's the other way around, it can have problems as well. In this world, since the fall into sin, really, we're separated. I think before the fall into sin, they were harmonized together. God walked on earth. Walked with Adam and Eve, but when sin came, it separated God from Adam, and it separated these two kingdoms that they, in many ways, act independent, but yet in a God when it's God pleasing, it's in harmony.
So, what is to be my interaction or my relationship within and between the two kingdoms?
In the kingdom of the right, it's a Christian's role to love, to serve, to witness, to be forgiven, and to help people know that they are forgiven, to give forgiveness of sins. It's the God stuff. There's one verse that says the kingdom of is from Romans chapter 14, verse 17. The kingdom of God is not eating and drinking, meaning the stuff of this world, but it is righteousness, peace, and righteousness,
joy in the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you. Thanks for finishing it. Yeah. And so that's that. But when we are then faced with, like we are in the United States, with picking people to help govern over us, then that's the kingdom of the left hand. And there we use our personal judgment, which is tempered by our Christian faith. We want a government that will bring peace and prosperity so the gospel, not us, but so the gospel, the church, might be free. When there's a tyrant on the throne, it makes it hard for the church to act free. It has to go underground.
That is true.
We don't want that. Now, it does grow and it flourishes because it's God's church. But it doesn't work so well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are looking to do things as we exercise here our vote that can best benefit the church and our lives, and then secondarily humanity. We look at the last half of the Ten Commandments, murdering and killing and hating. Adultery,
stealing, and lying.
Right. Yeah, we want a government that stops those things from happening, because when those happen, it's going to come back to bite us eventually. Mm-hmm. And so it's really left up to us to say, what's best?
So if I'm trying to decide who to vote for,
mm-hmm.
I can't just look at one or two issues. I have to think, which candidate,
mm-hmm.
be it for president or for governor, for mm-hmm. mayor,
right,
for my representative, which candidate is going to bring about the most good for humanity and for the kingdom of the right hand, even if that candidate, whether that candidate is Christian or not.
Right. Right. Because if finally it gets so bad, even though they're not Christian, God will put them there, but he takes them down. If it gets so bad, like Adolf Hitler, it imploded on itself and he killed himself because it got so bad. God will do that. But he's slow in doing that because he wants his people to be active in this world and guiding and governing these things. Used to be that a Christian could say, I'm going to have one issue, and that be the murder issue. Mm-hmm. I don't want babies to be killed, the abortion issue. And so I'll vote always for that. Well, now it's not so cut and dry. There are some who are pro-life, but with some of the other things, it creates other problems as a Christian, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. That, as you said, we look at all the issues and make the best choice we can.
With prayer and with talking with others, seeking God's wisdom in the whole thing.
Indeed.
Pastor Dave, you were telling me about a movie that you and your girls used to like to watch. And in this movie, you said there were identical twins who were separated when they were very young. One went with one parent and one went with the other. But they ended up meeting and having all kinds of crazy adventures. And the movie is called Parent Trap. And how exactly does that fit into this show?
First, it's just because I'm doing the show and I kind of like it.
Yeah.
And I saw it. No, the idea was they're twins. They were together at the beginning and they look alike. They act alike. They seem a lot alike when they were separated. And yet they're different. They're totally different. And so often that's how it is in our world, whether it be the church or sometimes the governments. They seem alike, they look alike, they act alike, but quite frankly, they are different. They were separated when we fell into sin. Eventually, they'll be back together when we get to heaven. And I'm not going to tell you the end of the movie, by the way. Watch it or send me an email. And you can send emails to
info,
I-N-F-O.
At
not-alone,
N-O-T-A-L-O-N-E,
.net.
And don't forget to search us out on Facebook. You can look for Pastor Dave Andrus or Room 4216 from any Facebook page.
Until next week,
we are not alone.
Do come back again to Room 4216.
Credits. Music and commentary about Walt Disney Pictures' Parent Trap. Copyright 1998. Interlude musicians, Robert Vaughn and Terry Nord.